When's somebody going to fix the clock over there?
Which clock? Sorry.
It hadn't been. It's 4 o'clock, not 3 o'clock. Drives me nuts.
Where are you looking?
On
I'm
the
sorry.
Wall.
He can't oh, there's one over there. Is. Okay. I'm always looking at that one. Sorry. I didn't know there was one over there. Well, we'll do that.
Well, the clock will be.
Even a stopped clock is right twice a day, right? Okay, let's get back to work and move to the Portland Development Commission budget and turn it over to Chair Kelly and Director Mitten in whatever order they would like to take this up for us.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. Well, first of all, I'm probably doing what shouldn't be done in the presentation, but I've left you a handout about a little bit of the history of this commission. An article about my father testifying before the commission in 1988 that was written by an Oregonian reporter by the name of Gordon Oliver, who I have to, full disclosure, he actually went to the same church as my dad, so you know, if there's any favorable remarks in there. So in a little bit of a reprise of history, I'm going to make a few remarks at the end of my prepared remarks. So let's get started. So this is the first budget prepared by PDC and submitted to you since I became chair last July. I look forward to working with you to move forward on our collective agenda. Today we will be providing an overview of PDC's fiscal 2015-16 requested budget with a focus on our requested ad packages for the upcoming general fund. As you know, the Portland City Council sits as the PDC Budget Committee and will review PDC's requested budget in full on May 13th. While we are happy to answer any questions you have about our full budget, we would like to spend as much time as possible today on our general fund requests. We will have another full session in May to dive into all the aspects of our budget. The requested budget was created by staff between November and January as informed by the draft PDC 2015-2020 strategic plan and draft agency-wide annual work plans for each department. The PDC Board of Commissioners reviewed and provided direction on the work plans at its December 18, 2014 board retreat and reviewed the budget during its work session on January 28. The budget was also reviewed in December and January with PDC's Neighborhood and Central City Budget Advisory Groups. Their recommendations align with the PDC Commission's priorities and are represented in the requested budget. Letters from the stakeholders are included in the requested budget package. Before Patrick walks you through the details of the budget, I thought I would take a minute to share my thoughts on PDC after 9 months as chair. First, I want to just, you know, remark about the incredible increase in activity, the vitality of our economy compared to even a few years ago. I guess I'm benefited as from the work of the previous chair and the commissions of the past and taking us through the very difficult times, and I get the privilege of being the chair during what are, you know, what's developing to be a very good time. We have many exciting projects that are emerging. I think I'm probably most excited about some of the activity out in Lentz, but there's, you know, so many other places to talk about. We are increasingly focused on equity, inclusion, and prosperity. The new PDC's strategic plan reflects this. The need to structure PDC transactions on to both achieve mission and address the need of the long term. As we complete the 5-year strategic plan, we will then move on to the very important long-term financial future for PDC. So in fact, what I think we're gonna do is develop a citizens committee, just like we've had with the strategic plan, to really look into the future and with the declining revenues from TIF, where we head in the next 10 to 20 years. I want to say that I've been very impressed with the commitment and dedication of the PDC staff. When you're outside looking in a public agency, it's always easy to make, you know, maybe unfounded judgments. And I've just been very impressed with the dedication that these people have for the public good. And so that's when I get to the article that I handed out. I'm taking the opportunity to give you this article. I'm, in fact, I think the first legacy, whatever we call it, PDC commissioner. My dad was a commissioner back in the 80s, and as you can see from looking at the article, he came to a meeting like this and said a few words about the budget, but then went on I think in some ways, my dad was the kind of person who scolded everybody about the lack of leadership out in northeast Portland. And a lot of history shows that, in fact, PDC and the City Commission took on that neighborhood and made incredible improvements. We also know that there was impacts that I think those leaders, city leaders in those days, didn't understand was going to happen, which is the displacement in the African-American community. My dad had an incredible place in his heart for that community, and I think he would, in fact, be very sad to see some of the outcomes, but also excited about some of the outcomes out in northeast Portland. So in a little bit of a reprise to that history, I just, when the mayor asked me to take on PDC commission role, I said, you know, where I come from is I care the most about those who don't have. And that's, you know, East Portland and parts of our city that, in some ways it's harder for us to impact, but we need to continue to follow up on trying to make amends for some of the impacts on northeast and the African-American community. I deeply believe that we need to deal with homelessness, our lack of affordable housing, not a new thing to mention in these days. And out in East Portland, the lack of sidewalks, the lack of paved streets, and all of the services, the parks. You know, in our strategic plan, we talk about how we want to have 70%, I think it is, of the city have walkable neighborhoods. I think that's a great goal. I would like to see it be 100%. And the hardest place for us to do that work is going to be out in East Portland, but I think we need to prioritize that. So that's my little father legacy speech to all of you. I know that's how he'd feel today. I'm pretty sure that's how he would feel.
Mr. Kelly? How do you feel about the establishment as a dictatorship, as suggested by your father?
Well, depends on who it's going to be, Mr. Commissioner. I'm not sure that, I think in running a business, having a democratic dictatorship is a pretty good method, but I'm not sure that's the way to run a government. I'm here to tell you that as the chair of PDC, I'm committed to help resolve these issues in any way that PDC's role can move all of that agenda forward. And we have to also have the commitment from all of you and all of city government, and frankly, all of our citizens to make those improvements, and we can be a really incredible, great city. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Patrick Quinton.
Thank you very much, Chair Kelly. It's been great to work with you over the past 9 months, and it's apparent to everybody that your commitment to all this is genuine, and I know it's been passed down through your family. So I'm going to walk through the budget, and as Chair Kelly mentioned, we have our requested budget, the big budget, as I say in more simple terms, and so we give you the high-level overview of that, and then we're going to dive into the general fund request, both our ongoing general fund support, but more specifically our two ad package requests today. As Chair Kelly mentioned, happy to answer any questions. We would, like I said, love to talk about our ad package requests in particular. Happy to answer anything, and then of course we'll be back in May on May 13th for when the council sits as our budget committee. That's not the right direction. That's not the right direction. Bottom one here. There we go. Thank you. So we start. We do our annual budgets. Obviously, resources and requirements. And as you know from seeing this our budget in the past few years, our basic resources come from tax increment financing. And in recent years, we even within that. Within that category of funds, the bulk of our resources come from existing resources that we have on hand. So The fact that we've issued long-term debt in a number of districts, we've had a number of larger planned expenditures not happen on schedule, things like the Veterans Memorial Coliseum or money we have set aside for the county building in River District, other River District expenditures, means that we have a fairly substantial fund balance. So that's what you see there in the largest blue wedge of the pie. And then the next largest chunk of resources we have is what we call short-term debt. And so that's actually not the long-term debt proceeds. That's the money that we have on an ongoing basis. We, at this point, given the resources we have on hand and the cash flow that we have coming into our districts, we have very little need to issue long-term debt. If we look out 5 years, and even longer, you know, we can paint a very different picture. But for this coming fiscal year, we really are almost pay as you go, if you will. You can see that we do have smaller sources of revenues that come from non-TIF resources, whether it be our ongoing general fund support, which is in the intergovernmental revenue category, but also things like loan collections, property income, and other fees. So that number, and you'll see it, this differs from our requirements, is about $253 million. That's what we would project to have as resources for the coming fiscal year. If you go to the next, so the next slide is our requested budget, and even then, once again, we have do we have contingency built into this? This is just expenditures. This is just expenditures. So the $173 million is what we have budgeted in our requested budget. The big categories we have, of course, are property redevelopment, and I'll get into that line item in a second. But we have, you can see, 31% of our dollars are going to PHB. It's about $50 million. We have about 10% going to business development. This is the collection of activities that we use to both provide direct business support to local businesses and also projects that would benefit the business community. We have another 8% that goes to infrastructure, which is the open space as well as transportation expenditures, and then another about 7% for both the operations of the agency as well as the maintenance of our assets. As Commissioner Novick and I have had this conversation many times, and other commissioners have asked, within that big teal, I guess you call it, wedge, about $76 million worth of expenditures, there's a lot of big line items. And so I just want to walk through what's in there, because it appears, obviously, to be an outsized line item, but it really is, it's this size is driven largely because of some very big line items in our budget. So as I mentioned in the convention center URA, we have about $23 million set aside for property redevelopment in the convention center. Much of that was debt proceeds that we issued in anticipation of rehabbing the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. You'll see in this budget that money has been collapsed into a larger property redevelopment line item. We don't, at this point, know the next steps on the Veterans Memorial Coliseum, and so we wanted to put that in a more general property development category, but that could still include something like the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. But that's $23 million alone. Within the River District, we have some quite large line items as well, 10th and Yamhill, Centennial Mills, Union Station. And then we also have in Old Town, we have next year we have in Old Town, how much in our line item? About, and we've dedicated about $57 million to redevelopment in Old Town. That appears in the budget as more opportunity funds for Old Town. And then we have another kind of range of other large projects that are embedded in these different opportunity line items. So this category is obviously the largest category. It sits across all of our urban renewal areas, and with each of those, it's either dedicated to large projects or it's in these large opportunity fund line items. So the next slide, you'll see we've included the housing set aside summary once again, and we do that just to remind everybody where we are tracking on our housing set aside conversations. And I need my glasses for this too. This housing set aside is a so this is a cumulative chart since the last update to the set aside policy, and then it goes out for 5 years. So you can see in the lower right corner where we will be in the aggregate for the entire city at 33%. But each of the fiscal years, you can see where we are meeting the target in each of the in each of our urban renewal areas. We've had substantial conversations about what we're planning to do in North McAdam, and you can see those percentages play out over that 5-year period. And you can see in other areas like the interstate, where we recently increased the allocation by $20 million, you can see how those numbers play out. But the current set aside policy is that we meet the 30% goal across the city, and then we have goals within each of the urban renewal areas that we can choose to move money between urban renewal areas in terms of the set aside, but the goal is the overall 30%.
What is it that under North McAdam, what is in those parentheses, 30% after 58 million CD complete? What is that? What does that mean?
Commissioner, that's the original policy plus the amended policy. So after the Central District or during the Central District, there was a commitment of 39%, and then after the completion of the Central District, 30% set aside. So there's a transition in spending over time. That was the original goal of the district.
And but then what's reflected in the forecasts are way above that.
Right.
And why is that?
That represents the planned amendment that would go forward with the additional funding for housing.
And has the commission discussed that?
The commission has seen our draft budget, but our commission will see the revised budget next week for the first time. But we informally, the commission has discussed that.
Because right now we've had a Planning and Sustainability Commission recommendation, but the council hasn't had a discussion on that particular policy.
This reflects the conversations we've been having around the urban renewal amendment, so that's why the table reflects that.
Comes out of this plan.
Yeah.
So those plan spreadsheets now do become policy that we're proposing to adopt.
They become the basis for a budget projection based on actual resources, right?
So the budget, so you're sitting on our requested budget. Our board will take a look at our proposed budget on April 8th, and then that budget will be finalized and submitted to you at the end of April or early May, when we come back and you sit as our budget subcommittee. So there's still our budget committee. So there's still another iteration of the budget that gets prepared and finalized before you actually act on the budget. So now moving on to the general fund request. I just wanted to start with the overview of our general fund budget. And unlike in previous years, and obviously because of the condition of the general fund this year as opposed to previous years, from an ongoing perspective, we haven't proposed anything new. So it's simply the increase based on the cost of living adjustment. That's the only thing that is new from the ongoing support that we've received in previous years. And in fact, in previous years, we've even changed line items, and we actually haven't even done that. So this is exactly the same budget with the cost of living increase built into it. We're happy to walk through any of the different line items, but it's still basically the same categories. Our neighborhood work, which generally supports our MPIs, and our Main Street network, support for neighborhood small businesses through both Venture Portland as well as our Small Business Technical Assistance Program, and our ongoing support for the adult and youth workforce programs that we fund. And then on the traded sector side, the economic development side, the money really goes into two buckets. One is relates to cluster development, which is a broad category that includes our direct assistance work with roughly 300-350 businesses in the city, as well as the work that we do in promoting trade and those kind of activities, and then our entrepreneurship programs, which are increasingly focused on entrepreneurs of color and women entrepreneurs. And then the last piece, which we've had support off and on, we had support last year, is the small business working capital. This is a small amount of money that we put into an existing loan fund that we operate that provides non-TIF money that we can lend for more working capital and other other uses that isn't eligible under TIF.
Patrick, are your ad packages are you looking for one-time money?
Yes, these are one-time requests.
These are one-time requests.
Yeah.
And how much? Can I ask you? Are you still have more to go? You want to?
I have one slide for each of the ad packages.
Yeah, let's complete your presentation.
Yeah. So the first ad package is a request for one time $750,000 to capitalize something that we're calling our Inclusive Startup Fund. And this is modeled on our experience with the Portland Seed Fund, which was roughly 5 years ago. And in that circumstance, we used about $500,000 to serve as the seed fund, if you will, to attract other investors into a fund that would provide early stage venture capital for startup businesses in Portland. That model, I think we all know, turned out to be quite successful. There's now two funds. They've leveraged our money into about $8 million of additional money, both public and private, and then they've financed roughly 50 companies. The follow-on investment number, I lose track of, but it's probably $30 to $40 million of follow-on investment in those companies. Substantial job creation. So a very successful model, both in terms of the actual outputs, but also in terms of how the city was able to leverage its dollars to attract other investment dollars. What we found is that without a very targeted approach, those dollars, while they're successful in helping startups broadly, really don't do anything to close the capital gap with respect to entrepreneurs of color and women entrepreneurs. And in particular, what we find is that businesses of color, when that they have less access to friends and family money, the kind of money that we typically see help a business get off the ground and even get to the point where they would even come to a seed fund to request an investment. So this is meant to be a model that tries to mirror what the seed fund did, but actually starts at an earlier phase in the startup life. And so we would expect is we would take our 750, we would put it out for some kind of RFP, find a fund manager, and then we would, one of the requirements would be that they then go out and raise money to at least match the money we have and hopefully find additional private investment and leverage our money in the same way, but a very targeted way. And like I said, to close what we've identified as a very specific capital gap for entrepreneurs of color and for women entrepreneurs. I will say that I was given authorization to share this, that when I shared this idea with Commissioner Loretta Smith, she expressed an interest in exploring how the county might serve as an initial match for us in this fund. So they like us, are in the same early stage, so she just wasn't expressing a commitment, but the county has a strong interest in serving this same market. And then the second ad package request is for a community development fund. Similar concept here, but to take city money, use it to begin to seed a fund that we could go out and raise additional money for to be able to help local community organizations, coalitions of community organizations, buy commercial property in their neighborhoods and put it under some kind of community control so that they're able to realize their plans for their neighborhoods. We find that this is the biggest gap that we have in our toolkit in working with the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative districts and other neighborhoods outside of our traditional urban renewal areas. in areas like Lentz and Interstate, if an organization comes to us and says, hey, we have an idea for some type of community real estate project, we have the tools to help them. And the Portland Mercado is a great example of how we can use TIF to make that happen. When you get outside, a place like Cully that's trying to buy the Sugar Shack, you can see how difficult it is to cobble together the resources to make a purchase of that size. And we think this is a tool that can be quite helpful. It really is targeted to commercial development. So there are other needs in neighborhoods around residential development. This is around commercial development and about community ownership of commercial property so that the communities have control over the long-term affordability of commercial space within their neighborhoods. And we talk about gentrification a lot as displacement of residents, but it typically also results in the displacement of businesses who lose their lease spaces once rents rise. And I think this is a tool that can help address that.
You would envision this, as you say here, primarily as a revolving loan fund rather
yes.
than as a grant fund.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
So once capitalized.
Yeah, these are all obviously non-traditional loans that would be long-term investments in properties. So they're not going to perform in the same way that you would see a traditional commercial loan. So we would need to find additional capital to make this fund sustainable, but it would be structured as loans, and it would not only would try and leverage money in the fund, but we'd also try and leverage money in each individual transaction. So that's, it wouldn't be the only money in a deal. It would be potentially the gap money, the hardest money for community organizations to find when they're trying to acquire and redevelop a commercial property.
Patrick, I have a couple of questions. Today we're focused on the general fund portion of your budget.
Yes.
So as I look at page 4 of the handout, it looks like the PDC proposed general fund budget is basically last year's with adjustments for inflation plus the two ad packages. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the two ad packages seem like they have a lot of merit regardless of how where you land ultimately on the five-year strategic plan. But let me ask the tougher question, because your distinguished chair said that you're using that as a framework for looking at this budget and moving forward, and yet my recollection is we're about 50% on that, and it's going to come back to the council for further discussion, and so the strategic plan is still a work in progress. So let me ask you the tougher question. What if the council or the PDC board, but let's or the council today. What if the council doesn't agree with the status of the 50% draft and thinks that maybe it's too ambitious or not focused enough or doesn't reflect council priorities? To what extent does that change the way you do this year's budget, if at all?
Well, I think the budget reflects our current priorities. I think our strategic plan is a reflection of our priorities. Whether the document ends up being exactly the way it reads now is another matter. But I think our priorities around widely shared prosperity, around wealth creation for communities of color and low-income communities, about creating healthy, complete neighborhoods. I mean, in some respect, that's what PDC has always done. And so I would consider the work we have outlined in the general fund, but our two ad package requests in particular as being items that are completely consistent with where we've been over the past few years. I mean, in particular, the opportunity to have specific tools targeted to wealth creation for communities of color, I think those are almost long overdue for us. We really need those in our work.
So in a budget, in an agency that has a budget, a draft budget of 15-16 expenditures of $173 million. We got two ad packages that are $1.7 million. When would we start seeing larger changes, structural changes, if at all, based on the outline of the new five-year strategic plan? And where would we look to see potential changes other than on the margins, like with the ad packages, which are just, in terms of percentage of the budget, are modest?
We've already begun to kind of anticipate what some of the operational changes would be. But, you know, I would say over the next fiscal year, you will see things like far more intentional, explicit use of community benefit agreements on almost all of our projects. I mean, you would see those kind of things being far more prevalent. You would see.
But there's an example of a policy
yeah.
focus that doesn't necessarily have a budget implication.
Exactly. No, exactly. And you know, it's not like that's not a priority for us now, but the strategic plan gives us, I think it gives us a mandate to really make it a kind of principle in how we operate, whereas now it's used on a case-by-case basis.
Well, let me make this suggestion, because, again, I think the ad packages, to me, stand on their merits, and they could be tweaked in terms of who accesses them at any time, but the concept, I think, is sound. Well, when you come back to do the larger budget in a couple of months, when we have the second bite of the apple, one of the things I'd be interested in learning more about is to what extent does the bigger part of the pie change in any meaningful way
based on a new
strategic plan?
I don't know what our
were allotted 30 minutes and we're over it, and we have our friends from ONI here, but I'd be interested in knowing
right.
how the architecture changes on
yep.
the bigger budget with the potential changes in the through the strategic plan process.
Happy to do that. Happy to do that.
Great. Questions, comments, Dante?
Just the question, Patrick, on the startup fund in relation to the Portland Seed Fund. Is the Portland Seed Fund closed to new participants?
It is not closed to new participants. The fund was established as an independent fund, so we seeded it. We put our request for fund manager. Fund manager came in, and then it was spun off as a separate fund. At the time, this fund was set up purely to go out and fund startups. So there wasn't an intentional equity lens when that fund was established, and that fund is operating on the very lower end of the market in terms of size of investment, but it's operating in a pretty traditional way, traditional networks. It's not something that can be readjusted now to do the work that we're talking about doing around inclusion. We could have a much longer conversation if you want about kind of why that is, but it's a lens that they're not able to adopt at this point, given the way they operate. They went out and raised money from private investors. I mean, they have all sorts of commitments that weren't once again, there wasn't an equity lens on the fund when it was established, and so that wasn't the expectations in which people invested. And I know you and I'm not, but for them to change course right now, it's not something that they're able to do. And I would argue that not only is you need a more intentional focus, I think, to have success, but we're going to be operating at a different stage of the growth cycle for a business. So we're gonna be investing earlier than the businesses they've invested in. So there are other aspects of the risk profile that are different simply by the stage of the company in which we're investing in.
Okay. Hi. Longer conversation.
Yeah, okay. I know.
Yeah. Sure. I was going through my materials last night, and I found these maps that PDC is you're familiar with these maps,
yep.
right? I think you probably produced them.
It's in the data, yeah.
Yeah, this one is called the Loan and Grant Activity, full year 2009-10 through full year 2013-14. It's, you guys all have this map, and I invite you to look at it because it kind of illustrates the impact that PDC can have on neighborhoods. And especially when it's like focusing in one area, you're feeling really good about how you're positively impacting that area. Then when you pull back, you can see that other parts of the city are not benefiting. And so I would urge you to consider having a measure in your dashboard that was around displacement, because I think that your agency has such an impact on displacement in Portland. It has in the past, and I know that you're examining, thinking about it, and really wanting to have a different sort of impact in the future. Although, you know, it's wonderful, all the economic activity. I'm not putting that down or anything. But it would be wonderful to have it shared more broadly. So some kind of a measure of that would be great on the front end. There's another one that's similar to that. Average annual employment change, 2009 through 2013. And it's the usual suspects doing the usual thing. East Portland having very low rates of change. The rest of the city, especially areas that have that intense focus, going way up. So those are all in everyone's packet. So that was, you know, that was the main thing that I wanted to say. There was also in your materials a letter from your budget committee. And the one thing I wanted to ask about was they had said that the design and construction of the Halsey-Weidler streetscape improvements, and this was online. I'm not sure if you have that in your packets, but it was your full budget document. And it's they were concerned that you weren't putting enough into improvements on that Gateway Street. So is that something that is okay to bring up in this?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, so we got really good feedback on that line item, and so what you'll see in the proposed budget in the next version is an increase as a result of that. So we have found that we have additional resources we can put towards that, and we'll be taking the Budget Advisory Committee's advice.
Okay. Excellent.
Thank you.
Other questions, comments, follow-up needed? Okay. Thank you both.
Thank you
very much. Thank you.